Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmakers Show. So today we have a really amazing guest, you know, a guest that has done it multiple times. You know, I mean, it's quite dizzy when you hear the amount of times that he's done it, and very successfully so. And we're going to be learning about pioneering, you know, in a new segment, in this case, renewables, how to go about, you know, like when you're dealing with hurdles, with bigger banks, bigger players, and then also how to go about overcoming, you know, hurdles that are presented by the market, by the circumstances. And again, you know, building, scaling, financing, and even exiting. So brace yourself for a very inspiring conversation. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Preet Lepaseb. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So originally born in Estonia, how was life growing up? Preet, give us a walk through memory lane.
So my year of birth was 1986. So it was Soviet Union still. So I've been brought up in a system where I was 5 years old when I started to see capitalism first. So I think for me, it has been a good thing. I was still not so old to earn much about in the 90s, because in the 90s, it was rather this kind of cowboy capitalism in Eastern Europe, that everything was still publicly owned, and now, and the people had the possibility to privatize certain things. So that I did enjoy, but what I enjoyed definitely was everything else that a geek can have. So obviously I had the relatives that were in West, and then I had the possibility to meet with them and this kind of things. And it opened my eyes on many topics. One of the topics was that how different things, what was said in Soviet Union, how they were really in the West, when the West was in your eyes. So TVs, everything that you can imagine. So the conflict was very big. So this, I think, was the first big change in my life, like who am I today?
So tell us, how did you get into law out of all things? Because, I mean, obviously, that's not really the path that you ended up taking as a founder, but out of all things, law, why?
I think one of the big things why was my brother. My brother was studying law before me, and we grew up together. Our parents were engineers, and I saw how complicated engineering could be and how complicated it is to earn money out of that as well. And I thought that I'm rather this kind of social creature, that I don't want to so much deal with stuff, but I would like to deal with people. And at that time, I think it was also a right decision. A lot of my relatives were engineers, and I thought that let's do a shift. And then I started to study law. And quite quickly after that, I started to concentrate law in environmental aspects. And yeah, so this was the main reason.
So obviously that's what ended up getting you into the renewable sector. I guess, how would you say that the legal background has served you? Even though you're not a lawyer anymore, how do you think it has served you? Like, what kind of perspective it has given you?
It gives you many aspects. I think when you study law first year, then you study social aspects, psychological aspects also, because it's an order of rules. And why previously, when you were not around, why those rules were invented or put on paper, and how you can change them as well. And if you look at the field of energy, for example, or the field of financing, both are very regulated markets. And to do there something, you have to have a view on those aspects as well. Like, you have to be understanding not only the technical aspects, but the social aspects as well. And why it is so complicated to do a bank, for example, in Europe. You need to understand it, or how to do asset management company, then that you need to also understand. And when we talk about electricity, then you also need to know exactly how on paper it works, because money and value and energy is something that is very important. Energy, I think, when society or humankind invented fire, this was very important for us, and this has been constantly around. So there is a lot backlogs of standards, backlogs of laws, regulations that you need to understand, but not only understand, but also change. So in those fields where I've been doing business, lobbying has been one of the main things to even do that business in certain countries.
So how do you get into renewables and, more importantly, the shift from being on the drafting to being on the execution, you know, side of things?
I think it's something that I've quite early stage understood that I don't want to be in advisory business, because I then only saw one part and I only showed to my customers where energy companies, for example, what are the risks there and how to act, so different alternatives. But I never saw how my knowledge that I gave them, how it was then really done. So what kinds of risks were taken and how the project finally looked like. So this was the main thing that I really understood, that being an advisor, it's a very good thing to earn steady cash flows until you are old and you don't anymore be physically or mentally capable to serve. And I think this was the main thing. At quite early stage, I wanted to go into a business and see myself how renewable energy will work internally. Because only then, when you understand that, you can do business in that sector.
So then let's talk about getting going with your first company, with Energia, which ended up getting a really nice outcome. So how did the whole idea of Energia come together?
I think that time it was, let's call it, first Kyoto protocols that were signed. We're talking about CO2 quotas. The story started to be, let's say, in the 90s. And then countries were starting to think about renewables and thinking the energy sector impact to climate and environment. And then there was different ideas how to do it. And I think at that time, the main business was this old conventional renewables, which basically meant that you will build a developer project, build it, and there is a free ride to the market, basically, that there is a subsidy and there is electricity price. And when you will put all that together, then you can earn money out of that. So I think that could explain also why we at the end exited as well, that those subsidy periods will start to end. The pioneering part was also relevant because the technology was still in early steps. I think started when turbine sizes were still near 1 megawatt, and our biggest turbine was 3 megawatt capacity turbine. So today we are talking about capacities of 6.5 on land or 7. And it's completely different business. One thing is technology as well. The technology has evolved, and if you keep on dragging the old assets, then you will stay to deal with them and not deal with the growth. So I think that was the part with Neila Energia. So why we did it, why it was cool to do it as well. So I remember the time when state-owned incumbent energy producers didn't want to do renewables. They say that it's a key display that we want to have big turbines and steam engines and everything related with chimneys was cool, and these turbines, they were just the toys. But that toy business started to be a very, very big market for everybody. So, and I remember also that banks, they didn't want to lend you money because they didn't understand this key display. So it was very complicated to get the project financed as well. So the pioneering part was quite interesting, but I think it was good that we closed that topic in 2018.
So for the company here, for Energia, it ended up getting acquired, right? Which is amazing. So walk us through how that acquisition process came about. You know, make us insiders for a minute here.
I think two things. Investors, being in new fields, they want to exit constantly. Like it's like with marriage, that when I'm a lawyer, so I have this kind of aspect that if you enter into a deal, then you should think about how to get out of that as well. Not that the vow that you give is less important, but I think you should concentrate on that as well. That how you will get out. So I think for Neila Energia time, it was a relevant time to get out because the investors wanted to get out. So it would have been hard to grow the business further, although we had a quite nice pipeline to build. And in 2018, it was the time where incumbent energy producers wanted to have also renewable energy pipelines. And they wanted to do IPOs or raise extra capital on basis of renewables. So there was a huge list of companies that wanted to acquire the business. And we were basically acquired by Estonian state-owned energy company. And after that, we basically exited for 1 year from the old market. So we had non-compete. But I think in the deal, what was relevant was this interesting part that how to sell a company to a company that is smaller than you are, and how to swallow the pride and this kind of feeling that you build it. And I think that was not easy, but looking back, I think it helped us a lot. We had the money, we had new ideas, and we were able to start once more. So
what were the terms of the deal, Preet?
I think to simplify it, the shareholders got altogether some 287 million euros in cash in hand, because it was the company had almost of 600 million, but there was a lot of debt in that as well. So in that sense, it was a very, very good deal. Just before, there were very good wind years as well. The company size at that time was 287 megawatts as well, like per million per megawatt. And there were like a pipeline of projects, almost 1 gigawatt, that the new buyer would be able to buy. And what else? I think it's, and with those numbers, we were the biggest. And when we look suddenly today, after 6 years, we have more capacity under operation and more in development than Neile Energia did. So it shows that this was this pioneering business. Like, you had a lot of things there already built. So, and they were operational. And yeah, but yeah.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So one of the other companies that that you started to and that you are still part of is Tulava. And basically the whole idea was to bring the BlackRock type of model. And you guys have been quite successful there with about $1 billion in assets under management. So what exactly do you guys do at Tulava?
Tulava is a very simple fund manager for second and third pillar funds. And they are second pillar is mandatory in Estonia, which basically means that you need to put aside certain amount of money for your pension. So we don't have like company programs for you, but we have state programs. You can choose asset manager and a fund where you would like to invest. And when Tulava started in Estonia, there were only banks that owned asset managers and who offered then these kind of products. And the products management fees were very high. So they offered usually index funds to Estonia, and the cost was 1.5%. And it was 2016, just to envision everybody, because they are very cheap today, but they weren't at that time. And also additionally, costs for the pensioners to be part of those funds were also there. So altogether, in some places, total cost to end customers were over 2%. So to have a very long instrument carrying a 2% cost on you, it's killing you, it's suffocating you. And over 30 years, it can swallow a lot of money that will not ever earn anything for you. And we just did one thing. We gathered around some 3,000 people to raise very small capital, because we started this business as a cooperative, and basically those people gave us money to finance the financial requirements or legal requirements to do a fund manager in Estonia. And then we went to talk with BlackRock and asked them to have different funds. And we basically did a product that from the day one, the cost was 0.5% altogether with regulatory costs. And we are today somewhere near 0.35. So this was the topic. And the total AUM is almost 1 billion today. So it's growing and growing. And we are showing to the market as well that long-term savings or long-term investments towards pensions, that the index funds are doing in longer run better due to the costs mainly, better than other actively managed funds in average. So I think it's a very good story, and it's this kind of positive continuing story, and that has been so far. And it's very interesting also how to get investors on board and how to educate them in a market which is not very, very well educated on savings, saving money in past. So we have 75,000 customers today.
Like everything, you know, an entrepreneur is an entrepreneur, no? And in parallel, you know, you decided to get going with Sunly, which is arguably your biggest success to date, you know, in terms of size. You know, I mean, it's remarkable what you guys are doing. So Sunly, tell us about Sunly. You know, why Sunly and what's the business model there in Sunly?
So Sunly started in 2019 from one thing. In 2009, there was new goals for 2030 by the European Union and also the member states to be more renewable. And what we had there, the situation can be rather described as when a city has 100,000 more residents in them, where to put them to live, and you don't have the room. So, and then you still have the old regulation how to zone and do yourself a building permit. So we had the situation where the numbers difference were very huge, meaning that there was almost no projects that you could build, and there was nobody was developing anything, but you needed to have in 4 or 5 years, you needed to have in gigawatts new projects. So when we started basically internally developing new projects. We were one of the early ones who basically understood that renewables is like industrial revolution, that the new production units will be a new place and you need to zone them. So two things that we grabbed first were people, experts in that field. And the second was land. So we went to big landowners saying that, look, let's start to go develop and go own the assets on their sites and develop it. So we growed our pipeline so far that we today have some 18 gigawatts on land developments in wind, battery storage, and solar. And this was all due to the right decisions we made in 2019. But we have been constantly wanting to be a renewable energy company back again, meaning that owning assets and selling the electricity to end consumers. And we have been constantly investing into startups or hardware startups in our fields. Because we thought that in Sunly, the difference with old renewable energy and new is that we have to concentrate on end customers. So not about the megawatts that you can build, but concentrating on those megawatt hours. Because if you put into a small system too much renewable, then the prices will be constantly zero. And this zero will not help the end customer, and it will not help Sunly as well. Why? We need to serve debt as well. And the customer, usually when the zero prices are there, they are not consuming as well. So you need to think about how to satisfy the end customer's need. So this is different in Sunly compared to Neila Energia, for example.
And obviously it's different too when it comes to financing. I mean, you guys have raised quite a bit. How much have you guys raised in equity and debt as well?
On mother company level, we have raised almost 300 million. So some millions less, but additionally, we just ended and closed a deal where we did a bond instrument with Copenhagen Infrastructure Partners and Rivars, both fund managers, who gave us money to build out additional projects. So it was additional 300. And then we have basically against that almost the same amount of senior financing in project level. So altogether, it means that over a billion euros and 16 or five years.
And how is it to the journey of raising all that money? I mean, we're talking about 1.3 billion between or more between both equity and debt, and also going through experiences like the Ukraine war that I'm sure that they complicated things quite a bit. So how has been the journey too for going through the motions of raising all the money?
One thing is what is good about Eastern Europe now compared to 10 years or 20 years ago is that this Russian flag has been different. When Croatia conflict was there in 2007 or 8, I don't recall anymore the exact year, but then the investor faded away also from the market, like Western investors. Then it was Ukrainian conflict start or Crimea conflict start in 2014. Then the same thing happened once more. But now when the last conflict started, the overall conventional war against Ukraine by Russia, then something completely different happened, that investors didn't fade away. So we did our last equity raise, and we started it exactly on the same day, basically, when the conflict started. And the situation wasn't that grim as it was before. So it shows as well that the Eastern European part of Europe are seen a little bit differently than in the past, which automatically also means that if you looked at how much Eastern Europeans or Eastern European countries have to build up, for example, their energy systems, going away from Russian natural gas towards new facilities, then investors understand as well that it's Europe. It offers at the moment better returns than in Western Europe. Yes, the risks are a little higher, but we are still in OECD, we are still in NATO, we are still in European Union. So I think that it was a little lottery ticket that this time it really didn't happen. So there we didn't have anything like that we could do, but just to believe that they will stay on the market, and. So this time it went well, but we had also something to offer. So we had offered to build new assets and help the communities to get over from very expensive Russian natural gas.
So let's talk about vision here, because obviously when you're getting this level of investment, you know, also getting the team together, vision is a big one. So if you were to go to sleep tonight, breathe in, you wake up in a world where the vision of Sunly is fully realized. What does that world look like?
The world will be almost fully renewable in those markets where we are. So it's the Baltics and Poland today. And why? It's possible. We are quite near to Scandinavia. And also why I believe in that world is not mainly about the climate, but exactly the fact that we have only old power plants. It's based on lignite or it's natural gas. Natural gas is coming from different regions, but mainly it was coming from Russia in this region. And so these kind of formulas at the moment help us to build out renewables. And the only reason is that you can buy PV plants, you can buy turbines, and obviously you can buy natural gas power plants as well, but the fuel is coming from the wrong place. So the opportunity is very exceptionally big. And this is why I really believe that this time it will really happen, that those wind farms and EV parks and pump hydro storage facilities and battery energy storage facilities will happen. And the consumers will also get smart, because a lot of their money is wasted in this old market. meaning that due to the fluctuating prices, people don't understand how the market really works, but they have understood that they need to understand, because otherwise they will lose all their savings. So this cocktail together will mean that by 2030, Estonia or Baltics will be, let's call it statistically on average basis, annually, 100% renewable. And Poland will still have some years to go, but it will be a very different system than it is today. So that is something that I dream about the market, and that keeps me waking up every morning. And this is a huge opportunity for investors to be here, because if the system is then built, then for the next 25 to 30 years, it will be still, again, this kind of quiet market. But today, it's a very big opportunity, at least for the next 10 years.
So we're talking about the future here, but I want to talk about the past with a lens of reflection. Let's say I was to bring you back in time. I put you into a time machine and I bring you back in time. You know, let's say maybe to that moment in 2000, around 2016 or so, where you were thinking about like venturing out and heading into the entrepreneurial, you know, path. Let's say you had the opportunity of being right there with a younger Prit, and you're able to give that younger Prit one piece of advice before launching a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
I would learn a little quicker and to understand to take more risks, because in some of the places you need to take the risk. It's the same example, for example, what is said also, that if you start to grind a new business for yourself, then when you really believe that it already works, and stop doing everything else and concentrate on this one topic. You need to do it, because otherwise, let's say, there is definitely somebody else who will take the idea from you. So in Sunly, we have seen also many lost opportunities, but we have seen good things as well happening. So this is where the value is coming from as well. So, but it's quickly learning, adapting, and also taking risk, and also taking personal risks. So it meant in some of the cases that all my money was invested and I paid myself only a very low salary to pay salary to somebody else. So it's, and today it's vice versa, that I'm paid quite okay. But it hasn't been constantly like this. So my family has been involved in this risk taking, and I'm very happy that I did many of those things that I did today, looking back. But giving some advice, I think to do those things quicker, not to hesitate, try it out, see how it goes, and also adapt to that maybe it didn't work out. In some of the business ventures in Sunly as well, we have closed down the business as well. You have to very quickly do it, but it's easier to do when you have some savings. So
no kidding. So Prit, for the people that are listening, that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
I think one thing is LinkedIn. You can find me there. The other place is our website. So you can go there. You can contact me. And I'm quite open-minded. If you have a good idea, then I will be definitely on it. And I will be quite frank if your idea is stupid as well. So this is one thing to understand, that there might be good ideas that has been working in the past as well. But yeah, it's, for me, it is very relevant to see the ambition. It's also with investors, there has to be ambition. So I'm delivering today every year, or I need capital every year, almost 500 million euros next 2 years. So there has to be, I have to commit, and the investor has to commit as well. So this is relevant. But other thing, what is relevant is that I think what is good about Sunly is that I have two co-founders here as well. And we have been a very good sparring partners, and they have, we do the sanity check to each other as well. So the sanity check I can give also to everybody else as well, that look, this idea is not, and at least in that form, it's not working out, or it would work out very well, but you have to start now. So yeah, that I can give as a promise to the listeners that I can do as well.
Amazing. Well, hey, well, Prit, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember, that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.